Welcome back to the Press Box Podcast. Today, in episode number 13, we are joined by Stanton Cameron. Stanton is a former Powell High School baseball standout and former professional baseball player with the Mets, Orioles, Pirates, and a few other organizations. Really interesting chat today. We get to talk a little bit about his path to pro ball growing up in East Tennessee. His long career in pro ball, 13 years, throughout the minor leagues at different levels. So we'll get into some of that as well. And we'll wrap up with some rapid fire and get his top five right-handed hitters of all time. He was quite the right-handed hitter himself. So without further ado, let's get into our interview we taped with Stanton Cameron.
Okay, we're with former Powell High School standout and minor league baseball player Stanton Cameron, formerly of Knoxville, Tennessee. Stanton, how you doing, my friend?
Man, I'm doing well, very well. Thank you.
Good to have you on, Stanton. We appreciate it.
Glad to catch up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's been too long. How long? I mean, gosh, it's been at least 16 years since Joseph played on your travel team, and probably anywhere from 16 to 14 years since we used to hit your facility. So it's been a long, long time, hasn't it?
It has been. And it's truly a pleasure.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, my friend. So now you were living in Florida for a while, but I think the last time we talked, you were in the process of moving to Boston. Is that right?
I am. I'm sitting on a blow-up mattress right now talking to you in Boston, trying to how to get a couch here.
Well, what part of Boston do you live in?
Brighton.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, are you handling all those lunatic Patriot fans up there?
I shouted out for the Titans and embarrassed myself.
Okay. Yeah, that didn't go well at all.
I got a look from a guy in the grocery store. I said, "Go Titans," and he gave me a look like, "Man, really?"
Every time I've been in New England, there's some of the most mercurial fan bases you can get out there.
I have fun with that sort of stuff.
Absolutely.
Did he give you one of those, what are you talking about?
Yes, he did.
You're not from around here, are you?
No, it was one of those things where it was, I said it once and then did not say it again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. They're not as bad as the Philadelphia fans and the Pittsburgh fans. So they've got that going for them at least. But other than that, they're tough to deal with. So tell us a little bit about what you've been up to. I mean, I know we'll get into your baseball career here in a little bit. I know you told me recently that you were in healthcare consulting. What is that all about?
Yes, my wife works for Harvard Health, okay. And we're healthcare consultants. And so we have our revenue cycle management for physicians. And she is employed by Beth Israel.
Okay.
And I run the consultant side of NORMAC Reimbursement Solutions.
Okay. So now what does that do exactly?
Everything that we do is from the front to back. The way to be able to say this is the life cycle of a chart.
Okay.
In billing, for collections.
Okay.
At the hospitals.
Okay.
And, anything that the good thing for us is that we, any problem that happens, we optimize revenue cycle if something goes wrong.
And so I see.
And of course, in the healthcare business, everything goes wrong.
Yeah, I was in graduate school at George Washington, and I took a class called, I think it was called like something healthcare and the law. And I got to give you props, man. That was one of the hardest classes I've ever taken. It seemed all kinds of complications here and there, and a lot of just rules and regulations and everything. So more credit goes to you. I don't think I could handle that type of stuff.
Oh man, once you deep dive into things, you see that there is just a lot of things that you know you can handle. And I'm blessed to be in this position. My lovely wife is the genius, and I'm the salesperson.
Well, you're a good salesperson. I know that, so I'm sure you've got that end of the spectrum covered pretty well. So take us through a little bit. Let's go back to your days in high school. Let's go farther back than that. When you were growing up, I mean, what was life like around the Cameron household? I mean, I know you're a baseball player. Is that the only sport you played, or did you play multiple sports?
I was a better basketball player than I was a baseball player.
Were you really? Okay.
All right. Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. It's interesting that you say that, because we had Steve Dunn on. And Steve said the same thing. He said he was a better basketball player than he was baseball player. So that's really interesting.
My dad was, and that's exactly correct. I was a power forward in high school, and you know, it just was natural. But I wasn't a pure shooter. I just, you know, was one of the kind of Dr. J type of thing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
In the post, yeah.
Well, yeah, take it to the rim and go at it. So we had two very good shooters on our team, and I wasn't one of them. But so my dad was a great football player.
Okay.
And but I started to do football a little bit, but I played up too much, and I got sick and tired of my line not taking care of me. Quarterback. So I went on and did basketball, and spent many, many hours at shooting free throws, just doing whatever I could to be a great basketball player. Yeah. And went to boys club. Boys club would not allow me to practice until I could shoot a left-handed layup. And I said, why do I need to be left-handed? So, our, famous Mike Capps, who's in the Hall of Fame, who still coaches in Knoxville, at the boys club, built the gym. He was my young mentor, and he would not allow me to practice until I was able to shoot left-handed.
All right.
So that's where the basketball part started. Played boys club baseball also, and that's how I grew up.
So what was it that, I mean, you talked about all the hours you spent playing basketball. What was it that kind of tipped the scales in favor of baseball then?
Just, it was just natural. Okay. You know, I had to work hard at basketball.
Right.
I didn't have to work hard at baseball.
Right.
And that sounds so simple to say that, but that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. I mean,
I had to work hard at basketball. Baseball just came.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, did you play both all the way through high school then?
Yes, basketball and baseball all the way through.
Okay. All right. So at what point, you know, during your high school career, I know you mentioned the differences in, you know, one coming natural, one working. Did you have a thought that you might want to play college in one or the other at a certain time? Or did you just always plan on playing baseball in college or beyond?
Well, I knew that I was a little limited even though I could elevate in basketball, I knew I couldn't elevate that much.
Yeah, yeah. And how tall were you then?
6'5".
Okay, that's not bad.
So it was, you know, it became in the big scheme of things, it was, you know, I could handle a pitch if I needed to, and I could run it down if I needed to in the outfield.
Right.
So, fortunately, I only played 9 games my senior year of high school.
Okay.
In baseball.
Baseball.
And I was drafted by the Mets.
Okay.
And that was very unexpected. I had visited Clemson, Auburn, and Mississippi State.
Right.
Okay.
So I wasn't expecting to be drafted at that point in time, but it was, I was dead set on going to Clemson.
What, you say you only played 9 games your senior year. So basically you must've been one heck of a baseball player in your junior year for a team to draft you based on just 9 games. Then what was it that was it an injury? Was it, you know, what was it that kind of kept you to just 9 games your senior year?
Back injury.
Back injury. Okay.
Yeah.
We played in the early fall, and I checked my swing, and then my back went out, and then I just had to battle through it, and I just couldn't do it. So it's an interesting story, but it changed my life because I was not expecting to be drafted. If I had not had my back injury, then I would have went to Clemson.
Okay. Really? Okay.
Okay. So yeah, that's going to be my next question there. What was it about Clemson that you felt made it the right choice for you, and why? Why would you say that, you know, only the 9 games made you not want to go to Clemson after that?
Well, I was recruited heavily by them, and they had great pants. Their uni was great.
The white pants, yeah. white cleats. Yep.
They had the straps on them, you know, tucked into the shoes, and I thought that was cool. Plus, it was a great a great college just to be a part of.
Yeah,
and I wanted Mississippi State. I liked Auburn, but Clemson pursued me even when I was hurt.
Right,
and they just kept asking me over again, are you going to be able to make it back? Mm-hmm. And then finally I had to tell them I could not make it back on their time frame.
Right.
I see. So that was kind of the deciding factor then. I see. Okay.
Yeah,
so
they had to do.
Right. I got you.
What round were you drafted in?
21st.
Okay.
So do you feel like, and I know this is all conjecture, obviously, at this point, but had you not hurt your back and played a full senior year, obviously you would have still been drafted, but you feel like you would have been drafted a lot higher?
I'd have been a millionaire right now.
There you go.
but you would have gone to college, though. You still feel strongly about that?
Yeah, I would have gone to college.
Yeah.
During our time, it was the Lee May Jr. was in center field. I was in right field. And he signed for 180.
Mm-hmm.
And then Todd Van Poppel
is
the one that busted the $1 million mark the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean,
1988.
Right. So, I mean, and obviously nowadays with the draft, it's multiple $1 million we're talking about here. So what kind of, as you sit here now, what would be your advice to a kid coming out of high school these days where, obviously if you're a first round pick, even, you know, the first 5 rounds, the money's going to be there, that signing bonus, but maybe you're a, 10, that the teens type of round, what would be your advice to someone going through the process these days, whether to go ahead and pursue the pro career or go the college route?
With baseball, I would go the college route.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It depends on if you're going to get seven figures.
Sure.
Then you
sure.
move on, and which is kind of the norm. But it, you know, it's really a toss up, man. It depends on, you know, you're going to get 40% of that is going to go to taxes.
Right.
And then you're going to, you know, you got to figure out, you have to have a plan.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, having an education is absolutely the first thing that I would tell a child.
Yeah.
And because you just, you there's not a chance to get the big leagues. There's no chance to get the big leagues. That's how you have to think of it.
Right.
Right.
But if you can take care of your family,
right,
it depends on what you want to do.
Sure.
Do you feel like, I mean, you know, a lot of contracts today, I would assume, especially with the guys that are making the big bucks, you know, they write into the contract that, you know, when their careers end, the teams will pay for their college. So do you think that's a good thing? Or do you think that when a kid comes to the end of his career, whether it's 19 years old or 26 years old, that they're less likely to go back to school? So you feel like they should maybe do it on the front end?
Well, here's I'll start from ground one.
Okay.
I was 1987 was the first year that they started putting the scholarships in, and we did not know at that time that if you started school, you had to keep going to school every quarter. And if you didn't go to school, then you lost your scholarship.
Ah, okay.
And that is something that was very troublesome to me.
Okay.
I started, went to UT, University of Tennessee, and fortunately or unfortunately, I would say that I played on, you know, several teams that went to the championship.
Right.
So at the end of the season, I missed semesters of college.
Right.
So I had to write a letter every year to be able to keep my scholarship.
Right.
And I missed one letter and I lost my scholarship.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah. That was the first year. They really didn't have it, you know, they didn't have their everything together because that was the first year, 87, when they started giving guys a scholarship.
Right.
And it didn't even cover the cost of college.
Right.
It was just one of those carrot in front of the donkey.
Right.
Yeah.
And it wasn't so, you know, in my situation, it's quite different, you know, after being injured and doing everything that I wanted to do, and then having the Mets come in and say, we want to draft you.
Right.
You know, it was, you know, you're 17 years old.
Right.
Yeah. So take me through those first couple seasons in pro ball then. What was the adjustment like for you? I know it's different for everybody, but, you know, coming from high school, was it, did you notice an extreme jump? Obviously, you're an excellent player, but did you take some lumps there those first couple of years, or did you not find it as tough to make the initial adjustment to pro ball?
I didn't mind it.
Yeah.
We, you know, it was when I was playing with the boys club, you know, we played 100 games a year.
Right.
So it was just like going back in and, you know, but you're playing with some – the only difference is you're playing with people that are elite.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the difficulty it takes to play that many games is what people do not understand.
Right.
And it wasn't that big of a deal. You know, I did everything. You have everything you can do to keep healthy.
Right.
Of course, we have strength and conditioning it was not that big a deal back then, but I'm kind of on the, I have a very good friend that is in your position, Joseph.
Yeah.
With the Brewers.
Okay.
It was, you know, you took care of yourself, but you cannot go to the training room every day. So you had to take care of yourself.
Right.
Go home, wash yourself down, do whatever you need to make things happen.
Yeah, for sure.
What's the biggest adjustment? For a kid coming out of high school, 17, 18 years old, who's the star of his high school team, and as you alluded to, you might play three games a week, maybe four if you're in a tournament, but most of the time if you're in the district, two or three games a week, and all of a sudden you're drafted and you sign the contract and you're sent to, some faraway city in a little city in some state, and now you're playing, 70, 80 games, day after day, getting on buses, facing, better players. What's the biggest adjustment in your mind for someone to be able to get through that successfully?
You just have to take care of yourself. I had no problem with doing and working. I considered it work.
Yeah.
With a job that I loved. But you do have to have a regimen of, I got up. If we were on the road, I got up, brought oatmeal with me, put it in the microwave at 8 a.m., make sure I gained my weight, because I would fluctuate about 20 pounds during the season.
Right.
And you just get up and you take care of yourself. I mean, you have to be grown up real quick.
Right.
So I would get up 8 o'clock, have oatmeal, put it in the microwave, go back to sleep, get up around 9:30, eat again, go to the pool. If we're on the road, I'll go to the pool, stretch, visualize around 12 o'clock, and then take a nap, listen to some, if everybody out there knows who Yanni is.
Yep.
Get on the bus and go to batting practice. And, that's I did that for 142 days every year for 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
so it takes discipline.
That's the way you do it.
Yeah.
You either do it or you don't do it.
Right.
And I'm sure,
for me being around the game the time that I have, I'm sure you've seen some guys that you played with that maybe had as much or more talent than you, but that weren't able to put that part of it together and it ultimately derailed them, right?
It does. And I will say this. I was not the most talented person on the planet. I saw some very talented young men that did not take the opportunity that they should have. And they could have been great at what they did, but they just didn't put themselves together properly.
Right. Right.
So I hung around longer than most people. Again, I could sit here and talk for not an hour, but days about, how my career went.
Right.
And it was, you get into a situation where guys who are very good do not understand what they need to do to take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't take care of yourself, then you're just ending your career right when you start.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. All right. So having said that, let's talk a little bit about on the field now. I mean, like we said, coming from high school, obviously you're going to start off and need a short season, A, high A, that type of thing. So when did it really click for you on the field to where you felt like, okay, I can do this, as you start to make the jump into double A, triple A?
I spent extended spring training.
Yep.
For the first 2 years, did short A.
Sure.
And then my first real breakout for me, where I thought that I was going to just really, kick everybody's butt, was in Columbia, South Carolina.
Okay.
And was having a fantastic year. One of those, you know, seasons where you see a baseball like it's a softball.
Right.
And I just kept, you know, I was trying to take care of myself like we were talking about, but I ended up getting some stress fractures.
Okay.
In my shoes, and I missed 60 games that year, and it was the year for me. It was, but you know, I don't know my stats. I, you know, can't. You can pull them up if you want to, but yeah, I don't think like that. So I was having a great year. And I ran through second base because my legs wouldn't allow me to stop. So I lost 60 days. Mm-hmm. And that was a game changer and a career changer for me, because I was on pace to hit 40 home runs that year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so making that adjustment to go into to answer your question, I didn't answer it properly.
No, that's fine.
Still Massachusetts. That's where I became a little bit of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then going to South Carolina and playing there was, I thought I was going to be in the big leagues next year.
Right.
And I didn't do anything during the off season. I thought that I was the dude.
Right.
And my work ethic after that changed so much because I lost that year.
Mm-hmm. What year?
It was 2,500 swings a week. It was, I became so regimented that, that it was ridiculous what I did.
Yeah.
Mm. And you're saying that kind of stopped after that year?
No, you're saying that that's what propelled you, right?
Oh, okay. I got you. Okay.
No, I had a little, you know, when you look at it in retrospect as a, you know, a 19-year-old kid, you know, you go back and go, why didn't you work that hard all the time?
Right.
Right.
And so it was a very 1991 when I was with the Mets in the, in Port St. Lucie, I failed miserably.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that failure, it was all right, I'm going to eat and kill. And that
right.
was it.
Right. Okay. So, yeah. So from there, you know, you didn't stay with the Mets very long after that, right? You were with Baltimore and then Pittsburgh. Is that right?
It was Mets to 91.
Right.
Orioles took me on waivers the next season, and I won Player of the Year that year.
Absolutely. All right, so let's
see. I think it was 92.
Okay.
So I went from the Orioles or the Mets. Put me on waivers,
mm-hmm.
went to the Orioles, and that was some historic stuff there. It was Mets, Orioles, Pirates, right. Texas, Cleveland, Kansas City, and Arizona.
Okay. So let's see here. All right. So what organization was it when you started moving up the ladder a little higher and getting to kind of, you know, AA, AAA, kind of right on the premises of the big leagues there? Was that Baltimore and Pittsburgh?
Yes, it was the Orioles.
Okay.
AA Bowie.
Okay.
Bowie Bancroft.
Yep.
And then the Pirates put me on 40-man.
Mm-hmm.
The Orioles did not protect me high enough.
Right.
So the Pirates put me on 40-man, and that was the year of the strike.
Right.
Okay.
So if there hadn't been a strike, I personally feel you'd have made it to the big leagues that year.
You're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
And it was a rough, rough time during that time. And I have to tell a, you know, I got to tell a funny story.
Yeah, go for it.
I was offered to play in the big leagues as a you know, a scab. Okay. You know, we had to deal with that. And it were really, guys, it was a tough time. And my mother's a Teamster.
Right.
So guess who's not going to cross the line?
That's exactly right.
So it was a tough time. I would have got my big league time in.
Yeah.
If I'd have just said, yeah, I'll cross the line, I'd have got my big league time in. May have made it. They did treat guys a little differently, the guys who did cross over. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of disappointing, you know, to see that. But, I mean, we were just guys trying to get there.
Yeah.
And but my mom said to me, she said, if you cross that line, don't come home. Quote.
Okay.
So, you know, I thought that I would get there anyway, no matter what, but it was, you know, there was a heck of a lot of pressure put on you, to cross the line during that time. So everybody could put, butts in the seats, you know, and try to help things out. And I, you know, I always think it's funny, you know, I drove my Monte Carlo down to Atlanta for the winter meetings, and I parked next to Porsches and Mercedes and anything, and they were like, we're doing this for you.
Right. Yeah, right. Sure they are.
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've sat next to, and they said, we're doing it for you.
Yeah. No. Well, you know, the interesting thing about that is I was listening to I don't know when this was. It was maybe last fall. They were talking about the NFL and how that labor negotiation is coming up again in a couple years. And they were talking about that very thing, was that, you know, the guys who are making the multi-million dollars, they can afford to sit out. They can afford to miss a few paychecks. But the guys that aren't making that kind of money, all it takes is one or two paychecks to go by the wayside. And there's a lot of pressure to go back in and play.
That's exactly correct. Mm-hmm. And it's just that little something that people do not know about. And they think, well, it's not that big of a deal. Well, it's a big deal when you're, you know, hungry.
Exactly.
And you want to, you know, you're trying to succeed, and this whole thing just keeps you back. I mean, it's not even, I always hesitate when I start to talk about it because I can badmouth everything right. That I wanted to on that issue. And but it's honestly, people do not know what it's like to be right on the brink.
Right.
And then it gets cut out from, like you've been, somebody cut your legs out from the bottom of you.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I don't want to say it other than that. I mean, that's just as quick as I can say it to you.
Well, listen, I know exactly what you're saying, and you know, one of the things that's always impressed me about you, Stanton, is your ability to overcome adversity. I mean, we've known you for a long time, and I admire you quite a bit, and you know, I want to ask you a little bit about that. Is, you know, when I was in college, and I had a couple pretty good years, I hurt my knee, and when something like that happens, and of course, you went through a lot more than I went through, how do you deal with it? I mean, you've been able to overcome it. I'm sure you've had rough spots in your life, but you've been able to overcome it. So, you know, how do you do that? I mean, is it your faith? Is it something that was instilled in you when you were young? I mean, how does someone overcome, as you said, getting their legs cut out from under them?
I was just always, from the start of my life, I was just always, you know, ready to, for the challenge. And it was, win and do whatever you can to be great. Mm-hmm. And I try to instill to kids that the work ethic that you have to do what you need to do is that's it. You just work. you just go get it. And if you, you know, if you decide to say no, then you're not going to succeed. And you stay focused, you train hard, you do what you need to do. And it wasn't an option with me. I just, you know, it wasn't that my parents didn't really instill that in me. That's just something that I had. I, you know, it was just, I wanted to be good. And I was allowed to be able to do that. Just go out, shoot free throws, hit baseballs off, you know, pick up a stick. Like, you know, we were talking, when I listened to Steve Dunn, you know, you can't, you know, the kids don't know how to pick up a stick and hit a rock with it. I mean, that's
right.
That's what Hank Aaron did. He did it cross-handed.
Right.
And so it's just one of those things, man. You just get after it. If you don't get after it, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now you're...
That's the country way of saying it. If you don't get after it, it ain't going to happen, man. That's just me. That's just what I did. You know, my injuries came along. You know, I turned down Tommy John surgery. I had a freak accident. Tore my elbow up. I was in Calgary and did a one-handed drill and tore my ulna collateral. I was with three different teams that year, and they didn't know I was injured until finally I told them.
Right.
You know, yeah. I can't hold on to mom anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough to work through that because I didn't want to have a zipper on my elbow.
Yeah. Right.
You know that, Joseph, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's 18 months. You're gone.
Yeah, that's right. Definitely.
I was in Cleveland and visited their strength and conditioning coach, and he said, let's just relax for a minute and take 6 months versus 18 months. So that's what I did. And I was able to play a few more years after that. But during the middle of everything was one of my favorite stories that I got to tell you is when I was on big league roster with the Pirates, I walked into the clubhouse, and this is just me telling you a story. Here's how bright I am. I walked into the clubhouse and Orlando Merced was sitting beside me.
Right.
My locker and then his locker to the right. And he said, hi. And I said, hey. He said, you must be a pretty good player. And I said, why? He said, because you're wearing Barry Bonds' uniform.
So you put Barry Bonds uniform on?
Yes, number 24. Oh, man. I did not even realize that, man.
Oh, man.
That's how focused that I was. I didn't care if it was number 0 or number 44, which is my number.
Yeah.
Right.
I didn't care. I just knew that I was there, and what do we got to do to get to the place where we need to be?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Also wore Daryl Strawberry's uniform.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, Barry Bonds is my guy. That's my favorite hitter of all time, right there. So I enjoyed that one. That was good.
If you want me to keep ad libbing, I will.
No, it's good. You're fine. Absolutely. No. Just thinking of my next question. I'll take it then to, I know you mentioned that was 96. So what was it that made you initially decide to give it up and retire? And then we'll get into, you know, your comeback a little bit later, a few years after that. But just initially in that first run, what made you say, okay, it's time to kind of take a break for right now?
Now, my body just couldn't handle it anymore.
Physically, yeah.
It was, yeah, it was just a physical thing. And, you know, I mean, if you're not there by the time you're 22 to 24,
right,
you peak at 26, you know, it's just, there's just too many kids out there that are, you know, that have been trained.
Right.
But they, as I would give props to Steve Dunn saying this, would be that they, but they don't realize how to play the game. And that's the, that's where the older generation comes in. They understand what to look for, where to be, mm-hmm. how to do it, study, right. do their thing, versus being just raw talent, is, you know, where you get Hall of Famers out of people that understand how to play.
Right.
You get players to just be players. It just, you know, that's a different dynamic.
Sure.
Well, it's such a strange game. You know, I remember a lot of the days when you used to, when you used to, Joseph used to hit your facility. And one of the things I remember, like it was yesterday, you telling him was, and I don't know what precipitated this conversation, but I remember you saying, hey, you know, go out there on your first at bat, look for something to drive up the middle and get your first knock. And then after that, you can swing for the fences. Because if you go 1 for 3 every night, you're going to be a Hall of Famer, right? You're going to hit 300. So I thought that was an interesting philosophy. It goes along with what you were saying, was understanding how to do it, right? I mean, get your hit, get on the board, and then go for it from there. So, you know, I mean, how do you, the game today is not like that anymore. I mean, these guys, they swing for the fences all the time.
Well, it is just exactly what you said. It's a walk and a knock. That's
right.
All it is. You know, if you get one walk and you get one hit and you hit 333.
Right.
And that's how you strategize your whole career. That's exactly how you do it.
Right.
And so everybody comes up now, and I'll throw a, since I'm in Boston right now, I'll throw out the Big Poppy right. out there. You know, it's just, I mean, they keep trying to throw him inside, and all he does is look inside. That's it. They think they're going to beat him. No, he's looking for it.
Right.
And, you know, you have to have a strategy before you even get up out of bed.
Right.
And if you don't, and you're trying to do the old school. Now, I mean, I've sat with Pete Rose and talked to him for an hour. And I mean, sit with him in Arlington Stadium, and just sit down and talk to that man, which is, he is that man.
Yeah.
And just sit and shot the bull with him. And I want to look at him and go, you're a switch hitter. You're telling me to see it and hit it. But I'm not a switch hitter.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you going to argue with? You know, he just, that is a supreme, concise hitter that can take a swing in a telephone booth.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, absolutely.
And, that's his, that's how he was able to do what he did. Same thing with Wade Boggs, you know, continually to do things that people didn't realize. I don't know if people know that Wade Boggs, you know, would sit in center field and meditate and do the things that and people try to throw his time off. There's just all kinds of intricacies that you get when you get into that groove and you know what's going on and you stay in that groove. Yeah, it's just what you do.
Right. Absolutely. So let me ask you this. Let's say that, you know, I'm a pitcher and I'm facing Stan Cameron in his prime. How should I go about getting you out, and what's going to get me in trouble? Like, what was your hot zone as well?
Don't throw me a breaking ball.
All right.
Everybody throws it too fast now. And they think they're gonna trick me with a breaking ball. I set on breaking balls. if you threw me a breaking ball, you got hit hard.
Okay.
Most of the time, pitchers they're going to show their fastball.
Right.
And they're going to try to get you out with their trick pitch.
Right.
And I faced some very top-notch pitchers, of course, and Al Martin, if you can look that up, taught me how to hit, how to be a hitter, not hit, in a totally different scheme. And I think that I might have told you this story, Joseph, that it was, you learn, you either hit or you're a hitter.
Right. Yes.
You sit on something, you sit on a zone, and you sit on a pitch. Mm-hmm. When you get it, hit it. That's just what you do. I had the privilege to face Gooden, Schilling. I'd have to go down the line. I didn't even thought about it. It's just one of those things. Tim Wakefield.
Mm-hmm.
What am I going to do with Tim Wakefield's knuckleball?
Right.
Nothing at all. So he threw me a fastball and hit it in left center field for a double.
Right.
Yeah.
So you just don't hit what they want, you know. Curt Schilling threw me three splitters. He threw me one fastball, and it got hit real well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, it just depends on who's going to, you know, I said sitting on a breaking ball, but who's going to hit a splitter that bounces in the dirt? Nobody.
Right.
Who's going to hit it anyway? Who's going to hit Tim knuckleball? Nobody. Schilling tried to climb the ladder with me, and I fouled a couple off, and I got on top of one and hit it real well. I'm bragging on myself.
That's what we won. That's good. That's what we need.
Strategy, man. It's just it's a strategy. That's what you do. I mean, I knew walking to the plate with both of those guys, Wakefield. You just don't look for something you can't hit. And I learned that from Al Martin.
Mm-hmm.
When I was and Al Martin's a great player, played probably 15 years in the big leagues.
Yeah, for the Pirates,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the one that really taught me how to be a hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said, you're not going to be able to hit what he's getting ready to throw you. Look for one. When you get that one, hit it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my, I wish I'd have known that early on. And I hate that kids don't understand that. Because, I try to hit everything. Do one thing. Do one thing good.
Right.
Write it down, catch it.
Right. What? Let me ask you this question. And I know you can't do anything about your body and the injuries that you had. But looking back over your career, is there anything you would have done differently?
I would have gone to Clemson.
Okay.
And that would be where things was, turned around. I didn't sign for enough money to even matter.
Right.
So I'd have gone to Clemson, got an education. It would have turned my life around at a young age. I was so privileged to play as many years as I did. And you just keep going because you see some success.
Right.
The carrot is a donkey. And it's you just keep going. Go to school. get your education, and then let everything happen after that, because there's only one half of 1% of the people that ever live playing the big leagues.
Right.
Right. Right. Right.
So go to school. To answer your question.
take away measures. Go to school. Absolutely. Absolutely. okay. So I guess just to finish up here, the last question, you know, we talked a little bit about your career, and then, you know, when me and, you know, my dad first met you, you were kind of into coaching a little bit, but then you decided to make kind of a late career comeback a bit there for a couple of years. Kind of what made you want to get back into baseball and play a little bit after taking a few years off? And just tell me about that experience, kind of coming back at for baseball at an older age, not an older age in life, and kind of what you wanted to get out of that and what you did to get out of that.
Well, it was I had wanted to get back in coaching-wise, just because right. of what we're talking about right now. Sure. Right? I mean, I'm sure. coaching right
sure.
now.
Sure, absolutely.
And I had the opportunity to get back, and I was just healthy enough to get back and play. And I did a pretty decent job. But the only way that I got back in was I was told by Doc Edwards. You guys need to look that one up.
Okay.
He was my AAA coach, and he's super famous in the old school eras.
Yeah.
Doc Edwards gave me a call and said, "Would you like to, you know, can you get back in the game? And then we'll get you. You have to be back in the game to get another coaching job or get a coaching job."
Right, right.
Right.
So I think that's the reason why I went back and spent a couple of years playing
right.
and playing and then being a tub of ice. You know?
Yeah.
So it was, so then after that, I got my gig with the, as a hitting instructor with the Brewers.
Okay.
Did the best I could there. My arm wasn't there to be able to throw batting practice, and you got to do that. You're called a working coach.
Yeah.
Right.
Not a hitting instructor.
Right.
But it's just a, that was a long, that was a, those 2 years, 2.5 years was a long road. I had some injuries in there. Almost a broken ankle, you know, that sort of stuff. And, you know, it's, you know, arm issues, leg issues. And I was just way too old.
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough to be able to get the coaching job with Brewers.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And I was fortunate enough to have some people that had known me when I was with Texas and Cleveland that were very, very good people. But they have to do business also.
Sure.
And I pretty much bowed down from my position and knew that I was not. I was not fit to be able to do it. And I hate to say that. It's the first time I ever said that out loud, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was, my coaching career with the Brewers ended after 1 year. I had some, great people and I had some lousy people that were around me. And, sure. you know, it's just that business. And I managed, I was player, coach, manager. I've done it all, man.
Yeah, you have. Absolutely. You sure have. All right. Well, we're gonna finish up with a little segment we like to call Rapid Fire. And what we'll do is we're gonna ask you a series of questions, and we just want you to answer as quick as you can with the first thing that comes to your mind or the first answer you know to the question. So it's just kind of a rapid fire, and then Joseph's gonna end up with. He's going to ask you a top five list, and I don't know what he's got planned, but it'll be your top five something or other. Okay. So first question is, when you were growing up, whose poster did you have on your wall as a kid?
The Bee Gees.
The Bee Gees. Yeah,
okay.
Right.
Absolutely. All right. Okay. All right. If you were still playing today, what would your walk up music be? Your at bat walk up music.
Summertime.
Summertime.
All right.
I used to have the Will Smith Summertime when I was playing in Memorial Stadium. My Sunday game. I would call in and tell them to start playing Summertime, and the speaker is as big as a block, so I could hear it as I walked in.
Yeah,
and that was my Sunday, but my walk off, 16 tons.
All right, yeah, 15 tons. What's tougher to do? Pinch hit the bottom of the ninth with runners on second and third, down by two with two outs, or pinch hitting in the fifth inning, totally cold off the bench. What's tougher?
Neither.
Neither. Okay. Why do you say that?
Well, because if you're a pure hitter,
doesn't matter, right?
All the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What situation would you rather be in?
Oh, well, I'm on the money making situation is not
all right.
You got it.
Right.
Okay. All right. So,
you're just prepared all the time.
Yeah.
But yes, the ninth, that makes you a heck of a lot of money next year.
Right. All right. So, you mentioned the Clemson uniforms briefly. Of all the teams you played for as a professional, what was your favorite uniform you wore?
Orioles.
Okay.
All right. All right. What TV show would you like to make a cameo appearance on if you had the opportunity?
Knight Rider.
Knight Rider.
Cool.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. Along the same lines, what was the last movie you saw in theater?
Baywatch and Knight Rider.
Baywatch. Okay. Hasselhoff. Yep.
Baywatch and Knight Rider. I get that all the time, man. I've been in airports, and they're like, hey, it's David Hasselhoff. I'm off the Hoff, man.
Okay. All right, so last movie you saw in theaters?
Oh, man. I haven't been in theater in forever. Give me another one.
Okay.
All right, here's another one.
One of my favorite movies.
Okay.
All right.
Is Trouble with the Curve.
Trouble with the Curve.
Okay, yeah. All right.
That's a good movie. That's a really good movie. I like that movie. Who's one person, if you had the opportunity going across time, that you'd like to sit down and have lunch with if you could?
Roberto Clemente.
Roberto Clemente. And why is that? Pure hitter or just the guy?
I would like to know that tenacity and that compassion.
Okay.
Gotcha.
All right. So we'll end with this. We do a top five list with all our guests. So for you, it's going to be, as you being a right-handed hitter, your top five right-handed hitters of all time.
The Big Hurt.
Okay. That was my, when I was young, when I was in kindergarten, elementary school, that was my guy. So I feel you.
I was fortunate enough to watch him from about 10 feet away, man, and it exploded, boss. But, you know, I mean, my guys, you know, I mean, right-handed hitter, he sets himself apart. I could go with Piazza.
Okay.
I'm a fan of most switch hitters, and I really felt that Mickey Mantle would have been greater on the right side than the left side.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that.
Of course, you got Pete Rose, privilege to meet him, but those are mine. You know, I think Mantle, if he stayed on the right side, done his thing, he would have. Of course, how can you argue that, though?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the guy was he hit more home runs than any switch hitter. Well, at least he had that record of more home runs than any switch hitter in history. So the guy was obviously one of the greats of all time.
Piazza was very good. I mean, I felt like if Piazza just would stayed in there for a minute. You know, I really honestly stopped following a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, for a while, but I thought he was a between Big Hurt and Piazza. Those were the two strongest right-handed hitters that I can tell you about.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, Stanton, we appreciate you taking some time to spend with us. We think the world of you, and we're so happy that we've been able to reconnect with you, and we wish you nothing but the best of luck, and stay warm up there in Boston for the next couple months.
It's warmer here than it is where you are.
That's true. But it won't be for long.
All right, guys. Such a pleasure.
Absolutely.
No, it was Joseph, a tremendous pleasure.
Joseph, I got to tell you, I shed tears. Proud of you. Well, I'm going to come find you.
All right. I appreciate it, man. Anytime you, when we get off here, we'll talk more. But anytime you need to come down and hang out, I'll be more than willing. So absolutely.
Well, I have a house in Florida, so.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's where we'll be, so.
Thank you, Stanton. Appreciate it. Stanton Cameron on the Press Box Podcast.
All right. Our thanks again to Stanton Cameron for joining us today on the podcast. I really enjoyed talking to him. Ralph and I's relationship with Stanton goes back a number of years, so it's always good to catch up with him and talk a little baseball. And looking ahead on the Press Box Podcast coming up in the month of February, we have a couple good guests lined up as well. And we'll also talk a little bit about the NFL season. Obviously, the Super Bowl happened. We'll break down that. We're going to wrap things up there and look into the offseason and much more good stuff to come here on the Press Box Podcast. So stay with us. Subscribe on iTunes if you have not already. And follow us on Twitter as well at PressBoxPod. Until next time, for Ralph, this is Joseph signing off on the Press Box Podcast.